Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Chapter 36, The Only One He Ever Feared.
"He hasn't gone!" Harry yelled.
He did not believe it. He would not believe it. Still, he fought Lupin with every bit of strength he had. I'm Casper Ter Kuile.
And I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Casper, two announcements before we get started today. One is that we have a Taylor Swift pilgrimage to Cape Cod this November.
Whoa.
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. Just kidding. I'm not the problem. I am bringing everybody a Taylor Swift pilgrimage. You can find out more about that at readingandwalkingwith.com. And then also, we have an every flavored bean conversation. What is our bonus conversation today, Casper?
We are talking about what is your favorite statue and why? Because statues turn out really cool and interesting when we talk about them. So come join us. I want to hear about yours too.
I want to hear about a time that a statue saved your life. And you can hear that and so much more at patreon.com/Harry Potter Sacred Text.
Vanessa, this week we're exploring the theme of mercy, and you are sharing a story with us.
I am. So when I was in the fourth grade, a lot was going on in my life and in the world. This was the year that my dad needed another brain surgery, and, you know, there was a lot going on with that. It was the year my dad had to stop working, and, you know, so financial stress. And then I've told this story on the podcast before. I wanted to be very helpful in this moment of stress, and so I decided to make dinner one night, and I burnt both of my hands and had to be taken to the emergency room and had my hands wrapped up in gauze, my left hand for a few days and my right hand for a few months. And something you need to know for background is that for some reason, my elementary school had an honor roll, like a dean's list. Like, you had to have a certain GPA, but then you got your name in a brochure as like one of the smart kids. And I don't want to brag, Casper, but I had been on the honor roll since the first grade. And this was like...
This does not surprise me at all.
Like, what is first grade honor roll? I have no idea. But like, it was part of my identity that like, I was a good kid, right? Like, and I was a smart kid and I did my homework. But you couldn't be on the honor roll if you got anything lower, I think, than a B+. And my grades slipped that year. I missed a lot of school with my, you know, dad. And then because of my hand, I couldn't write. So I couldn't do my homework. It was like very pathetic. And I had earned a B in one of my classes. And so I wasn't going to be on honor roll. But my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Horowitz, pulled me aside. And I will never forget it. She just added a little plus next to my B. And she sort of like winked at me and was like, I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was something along the lines of like, everyone needs a little bit of help sometimes, right? And It was such a moment of mercy, of like, I don't want this kid to have her identity or like sense of self changed because she's like had a tough year. And part of what I remember is that like, it didn't feel cheap to me. It wasn't like, oh, I didn't really earn the honor roll this year. It felt like a gift mm-hmm. rather than charity. And I think that that is right, like, one of the things about mercy, you know, we can go more into the etymology, but part of the history of mercy is that, you know, it's derived in part from the French merci, right? Just thank you. And I think that that is one of the things about mercy is that it is not the same as charity. It kind of feels like grace.
Yeah, I love that idea that, you know, you really hadn't earned the grades, but you were being given them anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of nature of like, yeah, it's just this generosity that kind of springs forth. That's beautiful.
Casper, before we jump into the 30-second recap, I want to say that mercy has this, right, like history with French and thanks. It also has a connotation in religion with forgiveness. But it also comes from the Latin merces, which has to do with a paid price.
Whoa.
Which is interesting, right? Like it's like once you've paid your price, you get mercy, right? You get forgiveness. And so mercy has to be given when something bad is happening, right? And I do think that that is going to help us as we try to find our way through the chapter.
Well, let's remind everyone what happens in this chapter with a little 30-second recap. Will you count me in, Vanessa?
Happily, my love. On your mark, get set, go.
Harry is in the river in Egypt because he's like, no, Sirius can't be dead. But Lupin's like, he definitely did, guy. And then he's like, chase, chase, chase Bellatrix. And Bellatrix is like, ha ha, take this, take that. And then she stops and she's like, Potter. And then Harry's like, I'm going to do a Crucio. And then it really doesn't work because our lovely hero never has any bad intentions. And then things are going wrong. And then Dumbledore arrives. And then he kind of, Voldemort speaks through Harry. And then Fudge arrives and is like, well, I guess it's true because people saw Voldemort and he's back.
That was really good.
That's my 30 seconds. It was not bad.
No.
It was not bad. Yeah.
I loved the way that you talked about denial. I like that you're like clarity of communication, not as important as me being clever.
Well, you know, you're here to provide the nuts and bolts. I'm just here to provide shimmer and sparkle.
And you do it in plenty. Can you count me in, please?
Yes. En français. Un, deux, trois. Let's go.
So Sirius is dead and Harry's like, I just can't even deal with it. Neville's like, did you like that mass murderer? I'm really sorry for your loss. And then Bellatrix is like, give me the flippin' prophecy. And Harry's like, broke it. Hermione's not dead. Dumbledore and Voldemort battle. And it turns out that Dumbledore is like a great battler, even though he's old. And then Fudge comes and is like, oh no. And Dumbledore is like, who? And Dumbledore's like, who's the headmaster of Hogwarts? I am.
He's back.
Get out of there, Umbridge.
So I'm wondering, Vanessa, if we should start actually at the very beginning of this chapter, because I think we see mercy happening in the very first words of this chapter when Harry has this exchange with Lupin right after Sirius falls through the veil. And Harry is still in that Egyptian river. And you can see the cogs turning on the page in Harry's mind. And Lupin is just very direct and clear, saying he can't come back, Harry. He can't come back because he's dead. And then Harry's like, he is not dead. And I think there's mercy in the clarity of the statement that Lupin is saying.
I agree.
I mean, he himself is bereft, right? He knew the risks going to this, I'm sure, but like his best friend has just died. But yet he still has this like mercy of being clear to Harry. And I'm wondering, can truth be merciful? Or I'm just curious how you think about that.
I absolutely think it can be, right? I think that someone just saying the truth to you can be such an act of mercy. I think that, you know, when these big moments happen, to quote Jane Eyre, our bodies rise in mutiny against them, right? Like, it's visceral. So to have someone speak to you clearly and calmly and say, right, like, your body is feeling all these things and, like, let me just give you this news. I know I've talked about this before, but when my friend Brandy died in high school, the person who told me Oliver Grigsby, like he just, I kept not understanding and he kept saying it to me so calmly. And right, like just the clarity of that as you're like trying to sort of swim through the confusion of something so gargantuan happening. I think mercy has to cost someone something, right? Like it is a gift. And Oliver did not want to sit there and keep saying this to me, right? And Lupin does not want to, you know, keep saying that Sirius is dead. But I think that, yeah, I don't know. Why is clarity merciful?
It's such an interesting question because it's immediately making me kind of zoom out to the macro scene of the whole Wizarding Society over the last year, where Fudge has done his very best to maintain this false illusion, right, that Voldemort is not back. And it comes out of this place, for sure, about power and control and all the kind of self-interested things. But there's also a part of just like, it's too painful to acknowledge the truth.
Right.
And it's just a really interesting relationship between pain and mercy, because there is something painful in the truth that Harry is being told here. But it might be painful in this moment, but like, were he not to accept this reality, his life cannot go on. Like, right. He cannot live. And so I'm just suddenly seeing this whole new element of like, mercy is not painless, right? Like,
right.
There's something actually very hard about receiving mercy, even. Like, it costs you something to receive it, if that makes sense.
Totally. I knew I didn't earn that B+, right? Like, Mrs. Horowitz could have just given me the B+, and I never would have known, right? But there was this, like, we have to acknowledge that you didn't earn this, but you've earned it in other ways, right? Like, and I think that's what makes it mercy rather than something else, like generosity. Mm. And there are situations like the one Lupin is in where, like, generosity is actually not one of the things at Lupin's disposal. Like, something tragic just happened, and so mercy is actually the best thing that Lupin has access to.
Have you taken that like B+ in some way with you? Like, did it change the course of your elementary school career? Or maybe more just like your sense of like, I'm a good student, or like sometimes people need a break and you give them more than they deserve. Like, has that stayed with you?
I, you know, on like a deep psychological level, I don't know. I know as a teacher, I like was big on rounding up, you know? Mm. And I do think, I don't know, right? It was like she was grading me on the curve of my life.
That's beautifully said.
And she was like, given how difficult this year has been for you, like, here's a little boost. And I was born on third base in all the ways. And that was just like a year where it, you know, was a little bit harder. And so I don't know that how much it, you know, changed me, but I definitely believe in what she did. Hmm. I believe in giving people the benefit of the doubt, you know, accounting for the fact that life is complicated and that actually you never know what's going on in other people's lives, assuming good intentions. I always assume miscommunication, right? Like, and so I don't know if I can give her all the credit for that, but I do think that she in that moment lived up to a lot of values that I still hold. And I think that Lupin is living up to his values here, right? Of like, he's a teacher, yeah, and he is a mentor to Harry. And like, this is the thing to do. The thing to do is not to say, Harry, let's not worry about this right now. We're in the middle of the battle, right? It's like, yes, he's dead. Now we have to do this next thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think that mercy does have a power dynamic, right? You grant mercy. Someone has it to give and someone receives it. And we really see that with Dumbledore, right? Like, there are few characters in literature who I have come across who have more power than Dumbledore. And his power isn't, yes, entirely structural. It is, like, in part structural, but it is also just, like, this skill that he has.
He also has the magic. Yeah.
Yeah, he literally has the magic, right, that other people don't have. He can make cabinets just like go on fire, and he can, you know, make chintz armchairs appear. These are yeah, incredible skills that he has. And we see him give mercy, I think, again and again in this chapter, right? The biggest one to me is like showing up and being like, I'm going to be the one who takes on Voldemort, right? Like, here I am. He's technically like a fugitive on the run. He could be like, I can't come right now. You know, like, there are bigger, I don't know what bigger fish there would be to fry, but like, sometimes I think just showing up and taking charge is a great act of mercy of like, you need help. And here I am with my body.
For sure. For sure. And there's something dangerous about giving mercy because you kind of become responsible for the consequences. And I think you see Dumbledore really step into the fullness of his responsibility because he is both saying to Harry, you know, figuring out your portkey. I know it's illegal, but we're going to do it anyway. Fudge, I'm going to give you half an hour. That's more enough than what you need. You can reach me at, you know, headmaster@hogwarts.com. Like, he's just like on every angle, interpersonally, systemically. He's just chased away Voldemort. The prisoners are tied up in the other room. Auras, go get him. Like, this is some next level girl bossing from Dumbledore. And the interesting thing for me is like, his relationship with Voldemort in this whole scene, is it merciful or not? Because on the one hand, could he have killed Voldemort in this moment? Like, he already thinks he knows that Harry is a Horcrux. Voldemort literally says, kill me in the boy. Like, if death means nothing, you know, just kill the boy. And I think Dumbledore already is like, well, I could kill him and maybe Harry survives because I'd be killing the Voldemort in him. But is it too big a risk? Like, there's something there about, like, is he letting Voldemort get away? But then he also says there are other ways of destroying a man that aren't about death. And, like, is he basically saying, like, I am destroying you, Voldemort, because I'm cutting away all your systems of support. I'm isolating you. Like, there's worse things than death. Like, do you think Dumbledore is being merciful or not to Voldemort in this moment?
I think he's being strategic.
Hmm.
I think he knows that if he kills Voldemort, does an Avada Kedavra, Voldemort won't die because of all the Horcruxes. And then that will be known. And so why should he give up the moral superiority?
And the strategic, like,
exactly,
public relations situation.
Exactly. The PR of moral superiority. If it's not going to strategically work.
Yeah. And like, and because Voldemort would survive, it would be like Voldemort's more powerful than Dumbledore.
Right. And so it's like not asking for a vote of no confidence, right? It's like, I'm not ready yet. I don't have all yes. of my ducks in the row. I am going to murder you. But like, I got to talk to some more Tories to get them on my side first, right? Like, this battle's a little too early for Dumbledore. So he might as well pretend to be merciful. It's political.
Ugh. So smart.
But here's my other question, Casper. Is it similar with Fudge? Is Dumbledore being merciful to Fudge, or is this strategic? I think that it's merciful with Fudge. And
really?
Yeah.
Say more.
I think it's both. I think that it is strategic insofar as Dumbledore is like, if I'm merciful to Fudge, I will have an ally in Fudge, right? Like, whereas I don't know, right? Like the devil you know. But I do think that he could take a victory lap here. I mean, he takes a mini victory lap. He's like, you now report to me. Hi, by the way, did you know that you're actually my assistant? Please make sure that all of the cat hair is out of my office as I move in, right? Like, he's definitely like doing a little bit of a shimmy. But for the most part, he's like, I will tell you everything you need to know. Like, you know, I'll give you half an hour of my time. He's not saying, and I'm going to go public with this information and everybody is going to know that you're an idiot and everybody, right? Like, he's, I mean, I guess this is like the Matt Potts question around forgiveness. Is not punishing the other person enough for it to sort of be considered merciful?
I am waiting for a moment of like, you know, Devil Wears Prada kind of, that's all, you know, like a little shimmy as he walks out of the building. But you're right. He doesn't depose Fudge, right? He doesn't call forth someone else from the ministry and say, you're in charge now. Fudge, you've misled the country. You know, we're gonna put you behind bars. But he does reassert his power and authority very, very plainly. It's so interesting because I think the bit that's missing in his interaction with Fudge, and obviously with Voldemort, maybe it's even there more with Voldemort, is care. Like, there's not a lot of... I feel like, can you be merciful without being compassionate? Like, if you think about a mercy judgment from ye olden times where, you know, some king is like, okay, we're not going to kill you. It's just a legal decision, right? Like, you're spared something. You're not actually, like... I don't know, that in your story with Mrs. Horowitz, like, there's so much context and care and, you know, she's thinking about your long-term interest and how difficult a year it's been. I feel like sometimes mercy is granted in this very kind of accountant-like way where you're saying like, well, we've killed four people this week. We'll spare this one. We grant you mercy because we want people to believe that, you know, mercy is possible. I don't know. I'm just being a medieval king here. But you know what I mean? Like, is there care in this interaction with Fudge? I don't experience a lot of that.
I just don't think that there has to be care and mercy. Yeah, I actually think sometimes the greatest acts of mercy can be when you don't care, when there's emotional distance and you're like, do you know what? Yeah. I'm just going to do this. I don't know. I just think our actions matter. Like, who cares if the governor means it when they grant mercy on someone on death row? It's like, I don't care. It's the act that matters.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that we should be so practiced in mercy that we don't feel it every time we give it. We just sort of default to it. Like in traffic, right? Like someone has gotten into the wrong lane and you feel like they should know better. And you're just like, okay, just go, right? Like I've gotten into the wrong lane before. It's just the right thing to do, right? Like, and that is an act of mercy and you can be annoyed while you're doing it.
Right. It's about the consequences of your decision rather than how you feel about while you're making it. That's really interesting. I like that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Redfin. Let's say for some reason you can't get back to Grimmauld Place, so you need to find a new home. If you're like me, you would go to Redfin. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations, so finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. If you see something you like, just book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put toward your next home. They even have a function where Trelawney will tell you whether or not she can see you in this house. Redfin. It's how Molly found the Burrow. Download the Redfin app to get started. This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a mental health platform that provides direct online counseling and therapy services via web or phone text communication. You don't even need to use flu powder in order to access a therapist through BetterHelp. I think we can all tell in book five that if you keep your feelings bottled up, it can start to affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off of your chest if you don't have access to Dumbledore's office. I know in my life, therapy has helped me identify patterns to help me interrupt ones that I don't feel like are healthy and find better ways to cope. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/sacredtext today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/sacredtext.
In some ways, the text gives us a perfect opposite example because Bellatrix, you know, has had this mission of finding the prophecy, of bringing it back. And then Harry says the prophecy smashed, right? Like it's gone. No one heard it. It's, you know, no one saw it, but you failed. And she suddenly turns from like enjoying the torture of small children or teenage boys to be like, oh, wait, I'm in big trouble. please, you know, Voldemort, don't hurt me. Like, I'm sorry. I did my best. And Voldemort just is, the word is pitiless. Oh, actually, oh, okay, brainwave while we're having this conversation. When I first read this, I was like, it's pitiless. And so he's not granting her mercy.
Mm-hmm.
But actually what we know happens is, at least the text doesn't tell us about any punishment except being like frozen out, right? Like they're not on speaking terms. His favor turns to the Malfoys away from Bellatrix. But actually is, okay, unpopular opinion, is he being merciful to Bellatrix? Because any other servant of the Dark Lord would probably be avacadavered right now. And I had read this moment of pitilessness as an example of him not being merciful. But if being merciful is more about the outcomes and not so much about the feelings, is Voldemort actually a paragon of mercy?
No, because he knows that what Bellatrix, right? Like this just shows that like mercy is specific to the person, because yeah. Bellatrix, all Bellatrix wants is a kind word from Voldemort. She would rather yeah. die. She will go to jail for 12
yes,
years.
That's so true.
Right? Like if he says, I love you as he kills her, that she's like, worth it, done. And so he is actually withholding the one thing that he knows that she wants from him, right? This is like the paragon of I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed for like the like little people pleaser. And you're just like, what? No, this is targeted punishment.
I buy it. Yeah, no, that is worse than death for her. That's true.
So Casper, it is now time for us to do the spiritual practice of Florilegia, which we haven't done in a little while. And this is based on a Christian practice where we select quotes that sparkled up at us. And we're going to put those quotes in conversation with one another and treat our compiled text as its own sacred text. What sentence do you have?
You need to mean them, Potter.
Ooh, give me the context. Where is that from? That's Bellatrix, right?
Yeah, exactly. She's saying, never used an unforgivable curse before, have you, boy? She yelled. She had abandoned her baby voice. Now, you need to mean them, Potter. You know, so she's definitely switched modes in her relationship with Harry in this moment. She's like, oh, you're going to come for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's this interesting mix of both like kind of shock and outrage, but also delight because he's coming over to use the weapons of her side. And at the same time, there's this weird like teaching role. Like she's literally explaining how unforgivable curses work and how Harry can execute them. So it's a very twisted moment.
I mean, she's mocking him.
She is mocking him, but
it's trash talk.
Yeah, it that is basically what it is. Maybe that's why I like it so much.
I mean, that is my question. Why does it sparkle up at you?
I love trash talk. I love it so much. And I recently had some friends over to play Risk. We called it Gays Play Risk. And it was just lots of gays who came to play Risk at my house. But everyone literally went around the table being like, so my siblings don't let me play with them anymore because like I get too mean. Or I had to leave my previous house share because we played games and it got really ugly.
Oh, my God. So
I looked for people who would enjoy and really go into the trash talk. And then I was the first to lose. And so all my kind of bravado came up to nothing. I literally had to get out some pencils and like draw while they finished the game.
I'm so sorry.
What about you, Vanessa? What sparkled up for you?
What sparkled up for me is very different. It is Dumbledore talking to Fudge, and he says, but a few minutes ago, you saw proof with your own eyes that I have been telling you the truth. And I think the reason I love this is like in the Trump era, like any time that you're like, let's acknowledge it, you and I, we now have the same truth, right? Like, this idea that Colbert, you know, started talking about God, like, yeah, 15 years ago of truthiness, right? Those moments where you can be like, come on, you've been gaslighting me for the last year, Fudge. You have been like willfully ignoring things, but you now saw it and you can't deny it anymore. Woo! Just that moment where it's like, let's admit it. Let's all get on the same page. So satisfying. And there's just no truthiness in this. It's just facts. So let's now put our two sentences together. You need to mean them, Potter. But a few minutes ago, you saw proof with your own eyes that I have been telling you the truth. Ooh, it sounds like a fight between Bellatrix and Harry.
Oh, interesting. Say more.
Well, it's Bellatrix being like, you have to mean it when you're trying to Crucio me. And Harry's like, but you've now seen it. You're now on the wrong side of history, right? I can just imagine like the incredulity of like, how are you being self-righteous right now? He just tried to murder children. That's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing? You need to mean them, Potter. But a few minutes ago, you saw proof with your own eyes that I've been telling you the truth.
Well, first of all, I love the word incredulity, and I want to say that much more in my life. Mm. But secondly, the place where my mind goes is that Bellatrix is here for proof. She's here to get the prophecy. And so, like, there's this interesting relationship between, like, this lost proof, this lost evidence, this lost information. I don't quite know what I think about this yet, but I'm seeing a connection between Voldemort's immediate belief of Harry's statement that the prophecy is lost. Because Bellatrix is like, no, that can't be true. And then Harry is like, he already knows it's true because he feels it in his body. He like he can feel Voldemort's understanding. And so there's something about like when you really mean something, right? When you're really telling the truth, that comes through perhaps in a way. I don't know. There's something about proof, truth, and like meaning the words that you're saying that's showing up for me. But I don't quite know what it all comes together as yet.
I love this. Like the magic to Harry and Voldemort is like they know in their bodies when the other one is telling the truth. And
yes,
I think that,
yes,
I think that that is something that is true about muggles, right? Like, you know, in your body, like, yes, we're now both connected and like saying true things.
Right. Like there's such an intimacy to knowing when the other person is speaking the truth. You just know.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And oh, wow. Okay. So Bellatrix is looking at Harry have a connection with Voldemort that she herself would want.
Yeah.
That's what I'm picking up from these two sentences is like she's actually seeing the very thing she most desires in the person that she most despises.
It's reminding me of like Westerns or like there's that scene in the movie Heat, right? Where like the bad guy and the good guy will like meet weapons down and like talk, right? And like that there's just like really very little difference between them. And obviously there are huge differences between Harry and Voldemort, but like there's an intimacy to being enemies, right? Like in order to really match as enemies, and we see this in their wand connection and obviously in this like physical connection that they have, but like you have to really stare into someone's eyes in order to be their enemy. This is like Hegel's point, right? That there's just like a profound intimacy, even just to like the master-slave component, right? To use his language. Yeah, and I love that. So Casper, now I'm going to read them to you in the other order.
Mm.
But a few minutes ago, you saw proof with your own eyes that I've been telling you the truth. You need to mean them, Potter.
Oh, this is taking me to like Petunia and Lily, and like Lily saying to Petunia, but a few moments ago, you know, you saw proof with your own eyes that I've been telling you the truth. Like I have this magic. I don't know. I can just see this kind of like screaming match between these two sisters of like, you have to believe me. And like, maybe, I don't know. I'm just imagining a whole conversation there of like, you know, Lily being sorry about it, but at the same time is like, but it's true. And she's like, I can't help it. And then, you know, Petunia's like, you have to mean that you're sorry. I don't know. I don't know why these words are taking me there, but like two people can be right. I think that's what I'm seeing in this.
Yeah. And the pain.
Yes. The pain. Exactly. Like these very intense conflicts where both people, you know, are coming from a real place. I don't know why I went to Petunia and Lily. Maybe I missed the muggle world.
But I think it's the pain of knowing that you're not going to see eye to eye with someone, right?
Yeah.
Of like, And, you know, in low stakes situations, we can say, like, we have to agree to disagree. But in high stakes situations, that feel so hard, where you're like, wow, you're just never going to see my point of view.
Or even worse, like, you see my point of view, but you don't accept it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, I really see that. Right. Like, one reading is how connected and intimate you are. And the other is when you want to feel connected and intimate, but you can't. Oh, well, thank you so much for this great Florilegia, Casper.
I miss Florilegia. We should do it more often.
Okay, we'll do it for the next 4 weeks.
Great.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This week's voicemail is from Ava.
Hello, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text team. I'm Ava calling from Germany. I want to bless Harry today. I want to tell him that it's not his fault that he has the visions in his dreams. Harry, it's not your fault. From the outside, it's so easy to say, just do occlumency, just clear your head, just try a little harder, just take it seriously. I have migraine attacks, and even after many years, after I should actually know better, my first thought when I have a new attack is, what have I done wrong? And yes, there are things I can do preventively to reduce the chances, but life is complex and complicated, and an illness is an illness. There really is no simple solution, and there is no one to blame. And Harry is not to blame for his visions either. I wish Harry that the people around him would see that and that they see that he's practicing as well as he can and that failing is not his fault. And I want to bless all people who are told that they are not taking good enough care of their health, who are put under pressure without the pain, effort and struggle being seen. You are wonderful and you are worth of love and support. Thank you so much for your podcast. Whenever I listen to you, I have a lovely warm feeling of connection and I love that. Bye.
Ava, thank you so much for this beautiful voicemail. So often, victims, for lack of a better word, feel complicit in their own, like, bad fortune, right? You just hear people do this. If there's a car accident, saying, I should have left 30 seconds earlier, right? Like we are primed to blame ourselves for things that aren't our fault. And I'm so grateful for you pointing that out to us. And I also, if you haven't read Joan Didion's essay on having migraines, she does this great rhetorical thing where she says, I don't get migraines, I have migraine. And that, like, she was always living in fear of her migraines, right? Her point being that we like talk about illness all wrong, even just like on a semantic level. And I feel like you are also doing that great work of reorienting the way that we think about illness and luck and what happens to us. And so just thank you so much for that really beautiful voicemail.
Thanks so much, Ava. It's now time for us to remember members of our community who have been loved and lost. And this week, we remember Tom Neitz, who was 83, a husband, father, grandfather, and meticulous engineer. Grampy Rich, who was 70, a loving stepfather and soulmate to Jan. Joseph Cicchino, 90, a husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, and a great sportsman. And Faye Crescibene Brown, 89, a grandmother, engineer, and RVer. May their memory forever be a blessing. And it's time for us to bless someone from this chapter as well, Vanessa. Who do you want to offer a blessing to today?
I want to offer a blessing to Dumbledore, who is trying to get Harry out of this place so fast. He's like, Harry doesn't need to be here anymore. And Fudge is like, doesn't he? And he's like, nope, here's a port key. And Fudge is like, that's an illegal port key. And he's like, Harry touched the port key. I think that like there is like this like pretty big political thing happening. And Dumbledore is just like, and there's a child who's been traumatized here, and let's just like get this kid out of here. And I love that attention to care in this very overwhelming and chaotic moment. What about you, Casper? Who would you like to bless?
I would like to bless Williamson. I don't know much about Williamson, but he is one of the Aurors, or at least members of the ministry staff, who runs into the atrium and says, it's true. I just saw Voldemort. Didn't you? Like, he is so incredible at shifting the conversation of like what's permitted or what's perceived to be permitted. And other voices start chiming in like, yes, I saw him. Yes, it's true. And I don't think I've really, unless I've really not been paying attention these years, but Williamson is not a name that I'm very familiar with. And so I just, you know, blessings on the people who tell the truth in public and are brave enough to say, you know, what's really going on. I don't know if it's quite a whistleblower moment, but it's certainly a voice that changes the tide of the conversation within the ministry world. So anyone who is saying something that's hard out loud for the good of everyone, a blessing to you and a blessing to Williamson.
Amen. Next week, we're reading Book 5, Chapter 37, through the theme of control with special guest Michaela Bly. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Vanessa Zoltan, and we are edited and produced by AJ Yaramas, who we love so much. Our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast.
Thanks to Ava for this week's voicemail, Ariana Nedelman, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Willison, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Matt Potts, Phidias Reyes, Courtney Brown, Natalie Folkert, Stephanie Pulsell, and everyone who sent in the names of their loved ones. We'll be back with you soon. Bye, everyone. Hey, you won a lineback kicker of the year. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
You get mercy. No, that's
right.
Not how it works.
Right. Like it has to be when you're like at a, Rory. It has to be when you're at a depth. Oh my God.